like to now invite the person whom many on this stage have already quoted. The person who stood up against the torture and persecution of Julian Assange, Professor Niels Melzer.
Special Rapporteur on Torture of the United Nations. I have been mandated by states to report to them, to states, about their compliance with international law, with the obligations they have committed to in international treaties. Can you hear me better? So this is my mandate, and this is what I have been doing in this case. I presume in my mandate that states act in good faith, that this is about applying the law. And whenever I engaged with states, they would say, well, you know, let justice have its course. Julian Assange must face justice. So please don't interfere with judicial proceedings. But in my investigation, I found that this isn't about the law. It's not about applying the law, because if this were about applying the law, Julian Assange would not be sitting in extradition detention, accused of espionage, for having exposed serious misconduct on the part of states, including war crimes, just as any investigative journalist would do or should do. If this were about applying the law, he would not have been sentenced to 50 weeks in prison for a bail violation just for seeking and receiving political asylum by another UN member state. If this were about applying the law, his asylum would not have been terminated and his citizenship would not have been withdrawn by Ecuador without any due process of law. If this were about applying the law, he would not have been publicly portrayed as a suspected rapist by Sweden for more than 9 years, just for this preliminary investigation that never succeeded to produce sufficient evidence to even charge him in court, now to disappear without any sound in the history. But it has caused damage that is irreparable. If this were about applying the law, then the UK would actually grant him the right to prepare his defense. How is it possible that a defendant in an extradition trial is asked to respond to the US indictment and has to respond, well, I haven't read it? How can that be if this is about applying the law? If this were about applying the law, Julian Assange today would not be detained in a high security prison now that he has served his sentence, and the only reason for him to be detained is to be in preventive detention in relation to that extradition proceeding. He would not be in a high-security prison under oppressive conditions of isolation and surveillance. He would not be in an extradition proceeding for a political offense, which is unlawful. It is unlawful under UK law to extradite persons for political offenses. What he is accused of is the prime example of a political offense. And he would not be in an extradition proceeding under the threat to be sent to a country where he will be exposed to a politicized trial with secret evidence behind closed doors, threatened with draconian punishment that is unlawful even under US law, under the First Amendment. And then the threat to be sent to a supermax prison for the rest of his life, supermax prison with conditions of detention that my mandate, my predecessors, all of us have consistently declared violates the prohibition of torture and other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. So what is this then about? Well, it is clear to me that this is about setting an example. It is about scaring other journalists away of instilling fear, of preventing others from following the example of Julian Assange and of WikiLeaks, and to show to the world what happens when you expose the misconduct of a powerful state. For decades, the West has received dissidents in open arms because their human rights were threatened by oppressive regimes. But today, Western dissidents have to seek for asylum in other states, just as Snowden in Russia, and until April, Julian Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy. Because the West has started to persecute its own dissidents, it has started to muzzle them and to threaten them and to expose them to show trials and these draconian punishments in high security prisons. So this is a systemic risk. What I see here, why am I so passionate about this case? It's because it is about all of us. It is about the future of our democracies. It is about the future of the rule of law. And it is also about the man, Julian Assange. I visited him on the 9th of May with two medical doctors. As you all know, we found clear evidence that he showed all symptoms typical for a person who has been exposed to psychological torture over a prolonged period of time. Psychological torture is not torture light. Psychological torture aims directly at destroying a person's personality and identity, of destabilizing a person mentally and emotionally to make them break. Torture always, in the end, aims at the mind and at the emotion. It always aims at breaking a person. You can do it either through inflicting physical pain, or you can do it through inflicting mental suffering. And that's what has happened to him. He has been exposed to constant arbitrariness. In all jurisdictions where judicial proceedings have been conducted against him, his due process rights have been systematically violated at all stages of all proceedings against him. This destabilizes his confidence in his environment, that his rights are protected, that he can prepare his defense, that his voice will be heard, that he will not be intentionally abused. If you deprive someone of that confidence that his environment will actually listen to him, and you prove to him consistently that whatever arguments you make, we will not take it seriously, we will twist it and we will turn it against you, it destabilizes you. You add another layer. You isolate the person from any other influence that could give him a positive affirmation of his personality. That's why you isolate the person. Why you put them in solitary, incommunicado, detention, in psychological torture. So you destabilize them further. They don't have any positive input. They don't have social contacts that could reaffirm them, reassure them, give them warmth and human social contact that everyone needs, and friendship and support. Then you deprive him of the means that he needs to prepare his defense, and you put him under constant surveillance. You expose him, you invade his privacy, you deprive him of any possibility to withdraw and feel protected. A person that is treated in that manner consistently over a prolonged period of time will be profoundly destabilized, will suffer from constant anxiety and increasing stress, and at some point it will start having physical consequences. We were able during our medical examinations to confirm that his ill treatment had already had neurological consequences. If that downward spiral is not stopped, it can end up having irreversible consequences of in the cardiovascular system, on the neurological system. It is extremely serious. Psychological torture is not something that we should not take seriously or that we can look over. We have to prevent this from sliding down the path that we have been observing for the last 6 months. And today I am extremely concerned for his life. I have written to the UK, I have written to Sweden, I have written to the US, and I have written to Ecuador in the end of May. I have presented my conclusions to them. I have asked them to investigate their contributions to the situation and to ask to take urgent measures to alleviate the pressure on Julian Assange and to protect his human rights. None of the states have agreed to investigate their contributions to the situation, although international law requires them to do so in the Convention Against Torture. None of these states have offered to engage in a dialogue with my mandate. None of them have taken any measures to protect his rights. So, as the Special Rapporteur on Torture, mandated by states to report to them, well, if they no longer engage with the institutions that they have created to report back to them about their compliance about human rights, then I only see a very dark future for us, for our human rights, and for the rights of our children. States have to take responsibility for what they do. They have to respond to us. Responsibility consists of response and ability. They have to be able to respond. Great Britain and Sweden, two European states, have each sent me one-page responses to my letters, basically saying that they reject all the allegations and they have nothing further to, no further observations to add. What type of engagement is that? What type of response is that? States are not obliged to agree with me, but they're obliged at least to engage and to have a dialogue and to explain to their people why what they are doing is lawful. Now, if they cannot respond, the presumption is there that it confirms the unlawfulness of their behavior. I have no other conclusions I can draw. So, this is important. It is about democracy, it is about the rule of law, and we need to defend this. This case is emblematic, it sets a precedent. If saying the truth becomes a crime, then this will not just have a chilling effect on journalism, it will do away with it. We will then very soon live under censorship and inevitably also under tyranny. I thank you.